of psychology and pop culture had a baby, they'd call it Shrink Tank.
A new paper reveals more intelligent people are quicker to learn and unlearn.
90% chance that there's some like weird animal out there.
Yeah. Howard Stern's been doing this forever. And far more extreme.
From Nashville and Charlotte, this is the Shrink Tank Podcast.
Welcome, welcome, everybody. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Verhagen in Nashville. We've got a great show for you. And our trending topic today is going to be the movie Wonder, and we're going to talk about resilience and post-traumatic growth. But first, let's meet our Charlotte panel. Dr. Emma Kate Wright is here. Hello, Emma Kate.
Hi there.
Any news on your behalf?
No, nothing really exciting with me personally. I do feel really happy about one of the clinicians here has a brand new itty-bitty puppy dog that they have brought to show people. Its name is Tinkerbell, and it probably weighs 2 pounds, and I about had a heart attack when I first saw it because of how cute it was. So,
whose dog is it?
It is Dr. Heather Wright's dog.
Oh,
so, very cute little
cutie dog.
Puppy. Yep.
Awesome. And Dr. Frank Gaskell's with us. Hello, Frank.
Hello, David.
How are you doing these days, Frank?
Pretty good.
Yeah?
I was reading an article about a 80-million-year-old prehistoric shark that still lives, and it got caught off South America, called the frilled shark, and it's a freak show to look at it. It's been around since Triceratops.
Wait a minute. The shark itself is not 80 million years old, but it's been around for 80 million years.
For 80 million years.
Okay. That's interesting.
It has not evolved at all.
Weird.
Zero. And it has 300 teeth.
It's kind of like Frank, hasn't evolved at all
right.
in the course of his entire life. And Jonathan Hederle is here. He rounds out our panel. And Jonathan, any news on in your life?
No, just getting ready for Thanksgiving. And I like the cold weather. I know we talked about sweaters in one of our last episodes, but the weather it will not make up its mind here. It's cold and sunny, and then it's wet and damp, so I'm having difficulty figuring out my fashion. Whereas Frank, you know, he doesn't tuck in his shirts, and he wears
anymore.
Jeans now.
Every
so
day.
He has his fashion figured out day in, day out.
I don't have to think about it anymore. I just put on my clothes, and it's great.
And he clearly has not put a lot of thought into his hair either, so it's not just his fashion.
I'm just letting it all go, man.
You are. Well, your hair is just going on its own.
No, it's not.
I don't think you had any say in it.
All right, Jonathan, what story have you found for us this week for our first segment that we call
Being Human?
So new research in the Journal of Applied Psychology finds evidence that too much intelligence can harm leadership effectiveness. Intelligence showed a positive linear relationship with leadership effectiveness, but this association flattened out and then reversed at those with an IQ of about 120. So according to peers and subordinates, very intelligent people make less effective leaders. So Emma Kate, as the psychologist who has been called the dumbest smart person by her own colleagues and peers, what do you make of leadership and IQ?
Well, great intro there. But yeah, no, I think first it's important to talk about IQ in terms of this article and just broadly, where when everyone thinks about intelligence, they think about your IQ score. And that is just one score that is actually, for kind of all intensive purposes, the average of other skills. So it could be your verbal abilities, your memory, your processing speed. And so this particular study is referencing that specific score. And so, you know, I think it's important to consider that everyone has different strengths and weaknesses. And for this article, I think there is probably some truth to it, where if at times you process information so rapidly, or you are using vocabulary or thinking about things in an abstract way that other people who maybe do not have as high of an intelligence as you, you might miss as a leader coming up with ways to kind of identify, okay, well, where are people going to have problems? Where are they going to struggle? So I think there's some really interesting stuff that could come from this sort of research.
All right, Emma Kate, I have a question for you.
Sure.
Do you think Frank is an intelligent person?
No. Yes. Yes.
You do.
No, I'm not.
No, do you?
Yeah, no.
Do you think he's an intelligent person?
I think.
And
Yes, no. I do think he is an intelligent person. Do I think he has superior intelligence? Absolutely not.
Oh.
No.
Wow.
But that's why he's a good leader. He's a good leader.
Well, that's what my next question. Do you think he's a good leader?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
In certain areas. Yeah. Like, he's not the greatest HR leader.
No.
Hey, I'm the best at HR.
Well, debatable.
Yeah, I'm not very bright.
That's not true.
Do you at least view yourself as being above average?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, I get Rick and Morty. So there's that.
Yeah, there's that criteria.
I mean, I know what Schrodinger's cat is.
I don't know what that is.
You don't?
I don't know what that is either, actually.
What is it?
I don't care.
Okay, briefly. It's a thought experiment. You put a cat in a box in space. Is the cat alive or dead?
Alive.
How do you know?
Because I have a mind meld with the cat.
You have to open the box to see if the cat's alive or dead. But
right.
As soon as you open the box, the cat's dead. So by studying a thing, you change the thing. You can't ever know if the cat's alive or dead because you have to open the box.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the greatest leader of our time.
Yeah. Oh my God. Think I fell asleep a little bit.
Is that going to be your inauguration speech right there to inspire people?
Definitely a transformational inspiration.
Makes me want to kill a cat.
Okay. Note to self, do not answer a question again.
Yeah.
Frank for president. I did not have sex with that cat.
I didn't touch that cat.
Wow. All right. Well, Jonathan, what's your take on this for real about the leadership and IQ link?
I think there's a lot of truth behind it. And I actually, the thing that came to mind for me was actually athletes that later on become great coaches. And it's interesting that a lot of great coaches across sports were not the superstar or Hall of Fame athletes. And I think part of that can be that, and this research and this article cited, is that sometimes people with great IQ find it difficult to anticipate what will prove to be a challenge to others. And so when you have great athletes that things just come naturally and easy to them, they don't know how to inspire, communicate, or lead someone else to that same process. So I think there can be something in terms of not just IQ like Emma Kate was talking about, but that ability to connect and communicate, I think, is just as important, if not more important, and then guiding and directing others to a desired outcome.
Right, yeah. I mean, emotional intelligence, right?
So yeah, emotional intelligence, social intelligence.
Wait, that got debunked. That's not real.
Okay, but there are certain skills that people might equate or associate with emotional intelligence.
No, they don't.
Self-awareness, social skills, which Frank is lacking now.
Well, Frank, you kind of proved that it kind
showing
of is true.
Showing empathy.
Nope.
Motivation.
Made up.
Those sorts of things.
Fake psychology.
Fake news.
Emotional intelligence is not made up.
Yeah, it is.
That's what Frank says to himself so he feels better about his lack of emotional intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think, though, this thing about leadership and IQ is like that the issue is really that it doesn't matter if you're smart, but you can be smart and be a good leader. You can also be average intelligent. It's not, leadership isn't about how smart you are. It's about these other traits that you have, right? Is that basically the idea?
Well, I mean, I think you're smart and you're a good leader, so it's doable.
Every episode, I feel like Frank and Dave need to get a room. It's just like,
ew.
No, ugh. You know, Dave, you're the greatest human being ever, and you have impulse
green.
Control. And look at me, I'm a hot mess. And you know, you don't have regrets, and my life is a regret.
I'm glad I'm on this podcast today.
All righty. Well, I guess we've figured this all out, and we're going to shift gears and talk about our trending topic today, which is the movie Wonder. And it is coming out, and it is a movie about a little kid with a condition called Treacher-Collins, which is a facial deformity, and it's based on a best-selling book. So we're going to talk about post-traumatic growth and resilience and all that kind of stuff, and talk about that movie in particular. But I want to ask you guys first, have you ever, and obviously we're not talking about major, like horrible trauma, but have you ever had a traumatic event in your life that was actually a pretty funny traumatic event? Anything come to mind?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I was watching a high school basketball game and my two best friends at the time were sitting on either side of me. And that was a time period when everybody sort of wore sweatpants. And I wore tighty whities. And I wasn't paying attention. And both my buddies started cheering and like say, look at that dunk. And I jumped up, put my arms over my head and started screaming. And they were just holding my sweatpants. So they were down around my ankles. I'm the only one standing and screaming. And everybody's staring at me.
So okay. Solid shank.
Weirdly, my funny trauma was exactly that story, but at the hands of Frank.
Yes, it was.
Did you do that today?
Oh, it's even worse, actually.
No. Way worse. I spoke in front of a group of people at the UNC campus. This is when I was in graduate school. I spoke in front of the group, and then afterwards, some people were lined up to talk to me about what I talked about, and Frank snuck up behind me and pulled my pants down.
But isn't that true for a lot of people? Like a lot of people's trauma background involves Frank.
Yeah.
With some type of association.
Yeah. No, mine doesn't involve anything like that. I basically was told I had a brand new pair of pants when I was little. They were my Sunday dress pants. And I was told I needed to change before I went and rode on my bicycle. And it was this really awesome bike with a banana seat and flowers on the seat. And I love this thing. So of course, I did not change before I went and rode my bike, and my brand new pants got caught in my bike chain. So my mom was so mad at me, and this was when we lived in an apartment complex, and she said, you know what, why don't you just take your bike down to the trash compactor? So I walked my bike all the way down to the trash compactor, and I actually put it in the trash compactor. And so then a week goes by, and my mom is like, why haven't you been riding your bike? And I was like, you told me to throw it away. And so basically, now, like all of my friends and I, whenever we joke about something, we're just like, yeah, just put it in the trash compactor. Don't worry about it. It'll be fine. But it's not as funny as getting pantsed. I realize I just tell this story and it's just not as funny.
I can't wait till Jonathan says, because Jonathan's trauma well is really deep. So,
oh, yeah.
This is, I have no idea what you're going to tell us.
Well, but I don't think he feels trauma, though. Like, I don't think he has that gear.
Well, I think you guys have heard most of my stories, like, you know, being exposed to a nudist hot springs in the sixth grade on Christmas Day, or having a tooth shot out by a BB gun while we were recreating the Vietnam War as I was the whole Viet Cong wearing a stir fry wok as a hat.
Are you serious?
Oh, wow.
But the one that I
didn't know that.
It's the sort one of I traumatic of, and racist at the same
yeah,
time.
Yeah. The one I thought of was, just in middle school, I was at a friend's house. He lived on a farm, and we were soccer teammates, and we were kicking the soccer ball around. And one of us kicked the soccer ball, and it went through onto the other side of an electric fence where he kept cattle and other stuff like that. But he told me the fence had been turned off. So I'm crawling through this barbed wire electric fence, and one of the barbed wires punctures me in my ass, and it's not turned off. So it's like, ah! But as I jolt, I basically go up and down, and I keep re-puncturing my butt. And I'm just sitting there shocked and convulsing in between an electric barbed wire fence until he runs in and turns off the
wow.
fence. So I'm just like, ah! 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 So.
Pretty good trauma. Oh, man. So, this movie Wonder, which we haven't seen yet, hopefully we'll see it in the next day or so, is about a kid with Treacher Collins. He's got a condition that changes the bone structure in your face, and you know, obviously poses lots and lots of social and emotional challenges for people. And part of what the movie is about, how this kid sort of moves through school and life with that, and It opens up this whole kind of thought of what we call resilience, why some people are resilient in the face of difficulty, hardship, traumatic things, and also this idea of post-traumatic growth rather than post-traumatic stress. Some people go through a trauma and they have mental health problems as a result, and other people go through trauma and they actually grow through it. So I want to ask you guys this question. Have you ever had a really significant traumatic event that actually, as you reflect on it, caused you personally to grow? Do you have an example like that?
Absolutely. Yep. I think we've talked about it before, but I've had cancer, and I also have had my house burned down.
So how did they cause you to grow?
Well, with cancer, you know, I was 21, and it was my senior year of college, and most kids at that age aren't really thinking about their mortality, so to speak. And I was kind of in denial about it at first because, truly, they said I had about 3 to 4 months if they were not able to get the cancer. And so my whole kind of sense of self and just purpose and meaning changed, where I was like, okay, I'm going to just live in the present moment. And that kind of stayed with me ever since then.
That's pretty cool. How about either of you guys?
Yeah, I had my sailboat accident.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. You have to tell this story because I think we... A year or so ago, you may have told this story, but I don't think a lot of people remember it. So go ahead.
Well, so this was my first day of vacation at beaches, Turks and Caicos. And I was so excited. And I thought, okay, I'll take this little catamaran out. And I've been sailing my whole life, so it wasn't a big deal. And I went offshore closer to the reefs, and this gust of wind blew. And I remember thinking, yay, I'm going to go swimming. This is going to be fun. And I'll just flip the catamaran back over. And as I fell into the water, there was this real hard bang inside my upper thigh. And I thought, well, that's going to hurt, or that's going to leave a mark. And then I'm getting back on the boat, and I'm swimming in blood. And I look down, and about a 7-inch gash through my bathing suit all the way up. And then as I was falling, I twisted, and there's another 4-inch gash going down. So basically, I got up on the boat and I'm looking down, and it was totally Saving Private Ryan. I'm trying to put my leg back together, and I'm thinking, why can't I put my leg back together? Why am I looking at my femoral artery? What's happening? But long story short, I was rescued and was on pain medication, so I don't really remember anything else after that. But what that did for me was, if you had told me that would happen to me, everybody I know would have said, you'd never survive. You'd be scarred for life, or you would die. You're not tough enough. But after going through that, I realized, oh, you know, I can handle more than I thought. So it's made me, I guess, a little bit more confident.
Jonathan, how about you? Any story like that?
Well, about 12 years ago, when I was in graduate school working on my first master's, we were living with my in-laws, and actually my father-in-law passed away, but we were there. We were woken up early morning, and his aorta had ruptured. So it was a very bloody scene. People were kind of really in a frantic panic, but I was basically just kind of holding him and staring into his eyes and just letting him know that, you know, everything was going to be okay. Everybody was going to be taken care of, just kind of not knowing what was going to happen, but pretty much knowing what was going to happen. And so that just sort of brought the immediacy of death and somebody passing. I'd had loved ones before then pass away, but never right in front of me, and never really having to find it within me to kind of remain calm and try to be calming for him and peaceful for him in that moment. So, and then you guys always joke about like my trauma or just sort of like my family dysfunction, but that, you know, that really did touch on the connectedness of family, even if you have sometimes not the greatest or strongest relationship with family.
That's intense.
I will tell you a story that you guys have heard. I don't know if I've shared it on the podcast before, but when I was 9 years old, I was riding back from my Aunt Charlene's house, and my brother and I were in her Volkswagen Beetle. And this is back in the 70s, and Volkswagen Beetle had no front end. In other words, there was nothing in the front. The engine was in the back. So the front of the Volkswagen was just a tin can. And my brother was in the back seat, and he was hitting the back of the driver's seat with an ice scraper. No good reason, just doing it. Bang, 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 bang. So she was like, Brian, get up in the seat. This is back in the day where, you know, like you didn't have car seats, you didn't have kids buckled in, they're just roaming around. So he's like, Brian, get up in the seat. And he's bang, 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 bang. So she reaches back and tries with her right arm to try and kind of hoist him into the seat. And as she turns, she takes her eyes off the road and her body's kind of turning. So she plows right into a telephone pole, 45 miles an hour. The telephone pole cuts through the middle of the car and I'm knocked out cold. I'm revived because someone's pulling me across the driver's seat. My side of the car is just so crumpled up. And I look and there's blood everywhere. There's teeth all over the floorboard. And I'm like, oh, those are my teeth. Like, that's me. And then they lay me out on the pavement. And people literally start they heard the crash. They're running up. And they see me. And they either scream or burst into tears. You know, like, that's not a good feeling when people see your face and they burst into tears. Or scream. So I knew it was bad. God. And so I was in the hospital. I had immediate surgery. Then I had 3 reconstructive surgeries. My jaw was shattered. My face was basically split from my chin up to my forehead. And I had a bunch of reconstructive surgeries over the course of the summer. And here's the thing. This was the last 3 days of third grade. And then I was going to go into fourth grade at a new school. So in August, this happened in June. In August, I was going to go into the school. I still had stitching. I still had my face was swollen, misshapen. And I remember going to school. And the morning that I had to go, I remember this really plainly. It was a defining moment in my life. I'm like, this is either going to just take me down or I'm just going to push through it. And I'm not going to care what other people think. I'm either going to become this little retiring, shy, withdrawn wallflower, or I'm just going to put myself out there. And so I just did. Like, I just went out there and I didn't care if someone stared at me. I didn't care if someone didn't want to be my friend. And I really see that as a really defining moment for me in terms of personal growth, in terms of confidence. So that's an example of that. So here's my question. We all gave examples of something really, cancer, a awful injury, an accident, a medical issue. And out of that, we saw some growth. What tends to predict whether someone grows through a trauma or whether it just takes them down? What things kind of predict that? And how does someone become more strong and resilient in the face of hardship than just torn down? Any thoughts about that?
Well, one thought kind of right off the bat that I can think of just from personal experience is social support. It is such a huge factor, kind of that social connectedness, where, you know, whether and even with other people who've experienced hardships, you know, there's always people offering to bring food or to help go let your dog out, or, you know, just having kind of people around who are willing to listen and empathize and kind of just be there is something that can really help in that moment. I don't know if that necessarily leads to growth eventually, but especially kind of in that beginning stage versus just floundering and being by yourself.
Yeah, I think it's also to be able to maybe a good sense of humor or to be able to laugh.
Yeah.
And because that's, I mean, when that incident happened with me, I mean, I'm sitting there thinking, this is comedy gold. I'm going to be able to tell
little gold
ridiculous
nugget.
Stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there and there's this British surgeon who's like trying to sew me up and having to cut skin because there wasn't a straight line. And I'm trying to grab my phone. This is like 30 minutes after, and I'm trying to take a picture of what he's doing because I wanted to freak especially you out, Dave. And he's looking at me. He's like, give me your phone. I'll take a picture. He sounded like Krusty Krab. And he's taking the picture, and I'm thinking, you know, I could say it's a shark attack. I could say it's surgery that went wrong. I say it's a tattoo. So, I mean, at the core, being able to laugh.
Yeah, that's a great one. I think also, and Dave, you've mentioned this or referenced this in past podcast episodes about a person's mindset. Mm-hmm. You know, with the folks that I work with that really struggle with some difficulties or tragedies in their life, they get so obsessed and consumed with the tragedy itself, and they they ask all these questions of like, why me, or it's not fair. These questions are statements where there's no positive resolution. And so they just circle around and around with this unsatisfying kind of preoccupation with no resolution versus a growth mindset, or that ability to maybe not find meaning in what happened, but the ability to find meaning in life and to be able to step outside of simple, I don't mean simple, but simply focusing on the tragedy and what isn't fair about life, to find what's meaningful and purposeful.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point, especially when you think about just how some people really do let stuff like that kind of beat them down. And it could be maybe they were already struggling with something before, and then this just kind of exacerbated. But yeah, no, and back to Frank's point too about the comedy, we did that actually. Me and my friends, we named my tumor. We named it Edna because we were like, that's the nastiest old lady and we're going to kick her butt. And like, so I think it is all about that mindset piece too. Yeah.
And actually, this will sound really strange, but Emma Kate came to my pool this summer and was wearing a bikini. That's the strange part.
Okay.
We have exactly the same scar.
Oh, that's true.
In the same place.
We do. It's on our thighs.
The same scar.
Yep.
So we're scar twins.
We are scar twins.
Happy scar twins. Yeah, I think too, like Jonathan was saying about the meaning, making meaning out of where your life is and where it's going. And Emma Kate, you talked about that and how that mm-hmm. sort of reset that for you. The other part is like making meaning of the event, or changing the meaning of the event in your head. So like for me, I'll use my example. I didn't realize it at the time, but rather than me focusing on people aren't going to like me, or they're going to think I'm a freak, or they're going to stare at me, I really remember thinking, like, if somebody doesn't like me because my face is messed up right now, then I don't need them to be in my life. And that mindset sort of is carried forward with me of like, you know, it allows me to kind of put something in perspective and say, you know, if someone's going to be petty about something or judgy about something, then I, you know, that's not someone that I need to have as a friend or in my life. So even how you think about what the traumatic thing is or does to you is important to it as well.
Yeah, and in the book Wonder, which I it's such a good book, I could not put it down, but it was really cool because he uses Star Wars, all these analogies and references about Star Wars.
Here it is.
That I really related to, mm-hmm. but maybe even having those interests or things to hold on to as coping strategies when you go through a process like that.
Yeah.
I think that's useful.
Apparently very good book. We're hoping for a good movie. The movie's Wonder. It's coming out this weekend. We hope you'll check it out. We're going to shift gears. And normally in our last part of the podcast, we give our doctor's orders. But this time we're going to do something that we've been doing for the past couple of years. And that is we're going to queue up an award that we give every year for the Champion of Mental Health. And the Champion of Mental Health Award is for a well-known person who has had their own struggle with a mental health issue and has used it as a platform to encourage other people to seek help or to speak out, or someone that just has been a strong advocate for mental health issues. And so this year we've narrowed it down to 6 well-known people, and we're going to kind of go over those, and we're also going to have a poll up on shrinktank.com, and you can vote. And so we're looking for our audience to vote on who they think best represents the Champion of Mental Health. All 6 of these people are really worthy, and they're all people that have done an awesome job this year. So the first is Pete Davidson. Jonathan, why is he on our list?
Well, Pete has been very vocal about his mental illness struggles in the past years or so with substance abuse and Crohn's disease, but he's come out really using his celebrity platform to discuss his borderline personality disorder. And that is I think that's a very misunderstood diagnoses. I think Pete's probably still even kind of learning more and more about it himself, but that's something that you also don't hear much about it with men. So I think that makes him a worthy candidate of a champion of mental health this year.
And the next one is John Green. He's the author of Fault in Our Stars, and he has a new book called Turtles All the Way Down. And Frank, he is a guy who's struggled with OCD and has been pretty vocal about advocating for destigmatizing and seeking help. Any thoughts about John Green?
Well, I read a really good article about this book by Dr. Megan Cannell. That article's on shrinktank.com. It's about this book. And I mean, I love this sort of environment where everybody's talking about this stuff. Where when I was a kid, nobody would talk about this stuff. And you'd look at this kid who's washed his hands so many times that they're bleeding and cracked and you don't know what's going on. So I think not only just John Green, but all the people that you're going to be discussing that it makes them more relatable. It makes if you've got something wrong with you, you're more likely to talk about it, share it. And even having this culture, I remember when I first started doing therapy, kids were like really embarrassed to go to therapy. And now it seems like it's a badge of honor. I'm going to get help, or I've got a kid sitting on my couch saying, picks up the phone and says, dude, I'll call you back. I'm in therapy. And having him and all these other people as advocates for this is huge.
The third person on the list is Kesha. And Emma Kate, why is Kesha on our list?
So Kesha has done a ton of advocacy work with mental health in general. She has had a very public battle against her former producer over sexual harassment. And overall, she has just been extremely vocal with her fans and with the public about taking a stand against sexual assault and having an eating disorder. And so she's just really crushed it.
And another woman that's on the list is Rose McGowan. She's been in the forefront of the news. But Jonathan, explain why we're putting her on the list for Champion of Mental Health.
Well, a lot of people may not make that connection, but Rose McGowan really is one of the more prominent female celebrities that has put her name out front, challenging the sexual assault and just the sexual harassment that women have been enduring at the hands of powerful celebrity men and leaders, specifically Harvey Weinstein in this case. Whereas a lot of the reports were anonymous people, she has really put her name and her career out front to be very specific and to put a face to the horrific accusations against Harvey Weinstein.
And Frank, the next guy on our list is a guy who's been at this for a few years, but this year has really stepped up in a big way. That's Prince Harry. Why is he on the list?
Yeah, so I remember when Princess Diana died. It was super intense, at least in my family, because my wife is obsessed with the royals. And I remember thinking about those kids and what that's – like, I can't even imagine being under that spotlight and losing your mom. And to have them and the royal families talking about grief and loss – these icons of royalty, the whole world looks at, and that they're willing to open up their story and their lives, it's humbling. And it allows sort of people to, again, like what I was saying before, talk about these issues that nobody used to talk about. I can't even fathom in the early 80s or 70s or 60s that this would even be broached. It probably wouldn't even be covered by the news.
Right. And the last guy on the list is Logic, who wrote a song, 1-800-273-8255. What's the significance of that song and of Logic's involvement this year, Emma Kate?
So that is the suicide hotline number, and essentially really trying to spread awareness that there is hope out there and people need to call this number if you're having thoughts about hurting yourself. It's actually been an extremely popular song, which is an amazing thing to see. It's really catchy, and the fact that it's spreading awareness on this really national level is awesome.
All right, so we've got a great roster this year, all of them worthy. Pete Davidson of Saturday Night Live, John Green, the author, Prince Harry, Kesha, Rose McGowan, and Logic. We hope you go to shrinktank.com and vote for them. And also, we hope you'll check out all kinds of cool articles and videos on shrinktank.com. Also, please follow us on Twitter at shrink_tank and like us on Facebook. Our producer and music composer is Sean Beck. For Emma Kate Wright, Jonathan Hederle, and Frank Gaskell in Charlotte, I'm Dave Verhagen in Nashville. Tell all your friends about us and have a great week.